your disposer, it is so bad. That had been open in the refrigerator for 6 months, which is something that we found the other day in the back of mine. Let it sit in there for about 35 or 40 seconds. Now, what is happening is that the wine is actually going into the future.
Or it's aging. Going back to its original state, though.
Well, no, it's aging.
I heard about that through the grapevine.
You may have heard about that through the grapevine. And then you can pull it back into real time, and it will win any wine tasting contest you ever had. Now, they, you know, the folks in the wine industry up in Northern California will hate this little device we have here. But the wine is actually aged because in physics, the dynamics of physics, you can actually break down the space-time continuum.
I'm sorry you didn't bring a sample along tonight, Bill.
No, I kind of keep that one under wraps. It's
not under wraps now, Bill.
No, it's not under wraps now.
Well, thank you very much.
But that can be done. And so the physics of what you're talking about is a part of the world we live in.
Yes.
All right, Al. Thank
Pleasure
you
very talking much. To you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay, Debbie.
Hi. I need, basically the reason I called was to talk about some premonitions I have is probably the best word to use. I frequently have premonitions that have to do with people passing away when they die or when they're about to die. Most of the time it's been family, but sometimes it's been total strangers.
You're quite normal.
Well, I have a lot of trouble dealing with it because I just wonder why I always have to get premonitions about death. The other thing is, my aunt died about 3 years ago, and my whole family seems to have some kind of, if you want to call it psychic ability, to be able to see people from beyond here, beyond life as we know it, and whether it's heaven or otherwise. And I felt very badly, because my aunt and I were very, very close, that she hadn't come to me. And went to Palm Springs with my husband and was laying there in bed and said, okay, it's time for me to see you. I think I'm ready. And I closed my eyes and I'm assuming I had an out-of-body experience or began to and got scared. I was afraid she wouldn't let me come back. And those fears really bother me.
You had an out-of-body experience?
Yeah.
You know, I am the only one in town that cannot do that, you know.
Well, it's the first time it's ever happened to me.
At least you had the first time.
But I didn't know how to deal with it. I was afraid that when I went through that door, I wasn't going to get back.
Okay, so you were afraid. It's interesting, there are a number of things you described in what you just said that gave a sense of losing control. I was afraid that I couldn't get back. I don't know why these experiences of premonitions of death have to happen to me. And if you think about the experiences as something that happens to you from without, as something that overpowers you and that you have no control over, that can be very frightening. But in fact, you have a lot more control over your experiences than you may think. And you can choose to not have certain kinds of experiences. If you actively decide that you don't want to pay attention to information about death, thank you, then that's something that you can actually make a decision, a quiet kind of decision where you really tell yourself, please no more right now. It's interesting that once people realize they have that kind of control, then they often decide, well, since I'm not out of control here, I think I'll have the experience. Also, you can learn to focus your experience in a positive way on other sorts of things. And that's why I like to work with the general public sometimes, because you can focus your experience in a positive way and learn about how you can use your abilities in everyday life and not just when something so overpowering as a death in the family comes in.
Well, I had, which a couple of the experiences have been not bad experiences. These are the people are coming to me to tell me that they're okay. Okay?
Good.
Basically, I mean, it's almost like I'm getting this so that I can tell the people that are left here they're all right, they were happy, it didn't hurt, whatever. That doesn't bother me, okay? The fact that I can go to them, the response of the people to me when I tell them, well, they were happy, there was no pain, they look at me like I've got four heads and I'm strange.
You've got to use great discretion in who you talk to there.
Well,
great
part of it was my family.
You know that.
partnership with my married family.
The only one I know who can get by with it without using discretion and tact, Debbie, is me.
Oh, okay.
Because I do it anyway.
How do you, I mean, I was in a sound sleep at our previous residence, which was an apartment building. This was a few years ago. And was awakened by the smell of, strange as it may seem, yellow roses.
Why did you know they were yellow by the smell?
This is what's very weird. The gentleman that lived across the hall from us was an alcoholic, and he also had an awful lot of other problems. He came by my door once, a long time prior to his death, and said, "Oh, my God, your husband gave you yellow roses. May I smell them? They smell so different than red ones." That was the night he died. I woke up smelling yellow roses permeating my room. And it was the strangest thing I have ever... I mean, why would I wake up and say, "I smell yellow roses"?
Was that the night that he was in there talking to you about yellow roses?
No, this was months after it. Months after it. It was very strange because he and I were not close. We passed each other in the hall, said, "Hi, how you doing?" You know, no major friends. It was just passing acquaintances.
Does it help you to know that this is not an experience that is unique to you, but that millions of other people have had similar experiences and you're not going crazy, in all likelihood?
No, I know I'm not going crazy. I'm thoroughly aware of the fact that I'm not. It's just...
Or you may be going crazy, but this isn't an indication of that necessarily.
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm going crazy is what I should have said.
Well, I think you're going sane myself, and the whole world is crazy.
I would just like to be able to feel some of the... I mean, if something good is going to happen to somebody that's still here, you know, instead of feeling the good that happens to someone who passes from this life to the next.
You know what I think would be very good for Debbie? And Keith is going to be down. You're going to be in this area in September with a workshop, aren't you, Keith?
Yes, I am.
Tell us the details, because this is the kind of experience, Debbie, that you and your friends would want to come to.
Okay.
All right?
I've found that people really want some personal time to work on their own psychic experiences and talking about that. And also work on developing their own psychic abilities without a lot of dogma attached, in a really sane kind of way that brings the scientific information across in a way that the layperson can really relate to and experience and work with. So I've been asked to come down here in September and possibly after that, working with UMS. You can call the UMS Center in Los Angeles at 434-3453. And the UMS people will give you all the details and tell you when. It's very important to me to work with the public because I want to know what people are experiencing, and I also want to bring what we've learned in the laboratory to the people on the street who really need to know. For example, you need to know that you're not going crazy, and also to try to make some sense of your experience and to get a sense that this is not just something that's happening to you, but this can be a positive side of your life. I can't answer all of your questions. I wouldn't pretend to. Mm-hmm. But we can certainly work with things like out-of-body experiences and remote viewing in the same kind of way as an alternative to a lot of the other kinds of information that's out there, which can be really confusing.
If I come down there, can I go out-of-body?
You can't. We can work on inducing out-of-body experiences, and I can show you the techniques. Now, I can't... We don't even know if an out-of-body experience is, for example, leaving your body. And the reason we don't know that is we don't know if you're in your body to begin with. I was talking to a...
You sound like my program director.
Well, a neuroscientist at MIT recently, and I just said, "Look, have you located consciousness in the brain yet? You've been doing this research for God knows how many years, and you're one of the leading scientists in the field. Have you?" And he said, "Absolutely not. We haven't located consciousness in the brain, and we don't really know where that comes from or what's going on." So for me to say, "Can you leave your body?" I would be making a lot of assumptions, but we certainly can explore the experience in a very personal level.
You know, Bill, there's a lot of techniques people have developed for leaving your body. The one that's most effective in that as many as 50% of people have an out-of-the-body experience is to almost die. However, I don't recommend the technique because the almost part is tricky.
It's a tricky part.
It's nice to be able to work on that experience.
Keith's method's safer.
Yeah. In a positive way without having to have an operation or a car accident in the process. Yes, I really think so. Okay.
Does that help you, Diane? Or to Diane.
Yes.
Debbie.
Yes, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Debbie, appreciate your call. Okay. And you're right on target, so don't worry about it.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back in a moment. My name is Bill Jenkins. But more importantly, we have Keith Harari here along with Dr. Charles Tart. We're talking about a power that a lot of you don't know that you have, that has been talked about in a very mystic way, but because of the work of Keith and Charles Russell and so many others, we're looking at it from a laboratory point of view, from a no-nonsense scientific point of view, that it is there. And so it's now time for you to start dealing with it in a very real way. Ron, you're on.
Yes. Bill, thanks. Dr. Keith, appreciate your time. I met a man who claimed to be a clairvoyant, an automatic writer, and a healer. And when I expressed my kind of skepticism about the whole matter, he, with dramatic results, showed me that he actually possessed some kind of power, starting with witching for water.
Dowsing.
And it, my relationship with this man progressed, and we went on to ultimately discuss guides. And is that a person or an entity that you know of?
Everybody seems to have their guides.
Yeah.
Who will openly talk about these experiences. They just seem to be a rather consistent part of the litany.
It's an interesting kind of phenomenon, and you wonder there going on. Is a person describing some entity? Are they describing some part of their own mind, some way of communicating with themselves by objectifying a part of it? We don't really know.
Can you hang on, Ron?
Sure.
We've got to do something, and I want you to stay on the phone. You've waited a long time. Good mind on this Saturday night, and we're here to stretch yours a little bit. It's time to kind of give your reality box a shaking out, if we may. The old reality box. And to help you do that is Keith Harari and Dr. Charles Tart. And Dr. Tart has a marvelous newsletter. I love it. It's called The Open Mind. I'd like to read what you said about the open mind, Charles. Again, you did it earlier, but there are a lot of new people with us at this hour. The open mind is curious about all sorts of things, has an intelligent confidence in itself based on self-knowledge of strength and weaknesses, wonders what's beyond and behind the everyday world, enjoys using its powers, testing its limits, and adding knowledge and skills, can take intelligent, calculated risk for the sake of growth, cultivates sensible doubts and grows from them, realistically recognizes current weaknesses and limits, but seeks to grow beyond them, appreciates living in a marvelous, mysterious universe, constantly seeks increased self-knowledge. On the other side of the coin is the closed mind. Is dulled by habit and fantasy, is insecure or unrealistically confident based on illusions about itself and stifling of self-knowledge, guards and reinforces the borders of the everyday world. We might add, jealously guards them.
Right. Shouts heresy when anything different happens.
Uses its powers to defend its current reality and fears to test its limits. Avoids risk or takes foolish ones through lack of self-understanding. Avoids doubt by mental rigidity or poisons itself by useless doubts, denies weakness and limits, and or takes them as absolute and unchangeable. Love it. Fears what is not understood and tries to inappropriately control life in itself. Wants only knowledge that is pleasant. Well done, Charles.
Which one are you?
I hope that I'm on the left side, the open mind side.
Which one are your listener? Which one's your listeners? That's the question. I think that's beautifully said by Charlie.
I do, too. I appreciate it. I'm going to frame that.
Yeah. Now, of course, we all wobble back and forth between those two sides. You know, there are moments we're more often and moments we're more closed. And sometimes, actually, that's a natural part of growth. You kind of open up, take in a lot of new stuff, and it's sort of scary in some ways, so you back up a little and get conservative, but then you digest, then you open up again and keep growing. It's a natural movement.
But you know, one of the encouraging things to me, Charles, is when we started doing this show back in 1979, we felt we had two chances at this, slim and none. And it has been moderately successful. No, it's been very, very, very successful. Because this audience out here wants to know these things. I think that you're finding people are more and more looking for a chance to be open-minded. Now, they may not use that
people really do want
rhetoric.
To know. That's the whole reason we're
really
writing this newsletter, to try and get this latest scientific knowledge about the mind right out to people directly instead of going through
and they can't get it anyplace else. You know, it's not in the Los Angeles Times, or maybe there will be an item there not fully done back on page 34. It's not dealt with that often here at KABC because we are, you know, very involved with the things we do, and we do them well. So we have this little niche, this little Saturday night niche that is all ours. And you will find that this is a very open-minded group out there. Now, we get our skeptics.
Good.
And I love to have them along. And we challenge their mind, and they come back and challenge us every now and then. And that, of course, is always a delight to me, to see that the minds are working. If I challenge, if you challenge Charles, if Keith, you challenge somebody out there, and they are motivated to the point that they'll get on this phone and say, hey, you've challenged me, and I think you are wrong. Well, I love that.
I love getting under people's skin.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's what it's all about. I sometimes get worried because there's not enough challengers that come on. It looks, it sounds like I've, you know, rigged all the calls. But that hasn't been the case at all. But it's a case for open mind. And it's a case that it does work. The interest is there. And I think that this show kind of even proves that, that the interest is there, although we deal with many subjects. But we're always kind of out on the vanguard.
Bill, this may be off the wall, but what you've said has just given me an intuitive feeling to share a little technique I've developed for opening your mind.
Okay.
It's a technique I call experimentally believing something. You know, usually we either believe something or don't. We don't know why we believed it or not why we disbelieve it. But it's real interesting to just say, okay, for a day or an hour or something like that, I'm going to believe something all I can, and then I'm going to see what happens. So, for instance, you're going to go take a walk for an hour downtown. Try believing that people are basically rotten. That, you know, underneath a surface politeness, they're really awful. And look around and see what you can see. And then for the next hour, say, try believing people are really pretty great underneath a sort of gruff surface. And look around and see what you can see. You can discover how much the beliefs you have influence what you see. And then you can ask yourself the question, that, well, what is it I do believe and what are the consequences on me?
Oh, they influence what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you touch.
Make an experiment out of what you believe instead of just taking whatever you've been given by society.
Of course, you realize you're doing that all the time.
I saw the most incredible example of this the other day. A dear friend of mine came over to the house where we were experimenting with a whole new type of sound. We call it optophonics. And it's a hearing experience that is like the way you hear. It's not stereo, it's not mono, it's the way you hear. And let him listen to just a television show that we had recorded off of Channel 7, the Liberty Weekend. Magnificent in the room, right? He says, I don't hear anything. It, you know, it sounds like hi-fi. Just didn't hear anything. Now, we've had sound engineers and people, you know, what they're hearing is quite unique. And worked with him a little bit and found out that he used to be a musician in a band, and some time ago he had decided that hi-fi was no good and that stereo was a gimmick, and therefore he had never even bought a hi-fi or stereo set because it was all bad. And he had changed his consciousness and his mind to the point that he couldn't even hear that. We worked with him a little bit, gave him some earphone techniques, and he went back out and listened to the optophonics again. And it was a whole new world for him. But his mind had literally shut down his eighth auditory nerve.
Now, that happens with psychic experiences as well.
Right.
And, in fact, bringing people into the laboratory sometimes to use certain techniques that we've developed over all these years of research, it's like having them, helping them learn to listen. The sound is there. They're just not hearing it.
That's right.
Somebody might say, well, what good is it? Who needs it? Right, in the Valley of the Blind, they would say, why open your eyes? Who needs it? And besides, it might be an invasion of privacy. And in fact, it turns out that you can see a lot more of what's going on around you and connect and communicate better. And it's very interesting that people, in order to feel more secure, sometimes close themselves off from things that might be really wonderful experiences and that might ultimately make them feel better about themselves. It's a kind of resistance.
Exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And in order to have these experiences, you have to rely upon more than just your biological being. And I'm including the human brain or mind or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot more to what goes on between your cranium there than the cells that are up there. There is a spiritual intelligence that is very actively at work.
We might say there's some space between the ears.
There certainly is between these ears. I know that. At least I hear that.
Some people are four space, you know.
I don't know what happens in that space, but one of these days we'll fill in the blanks and something interesting may happen. Oh, my guests are Keith Arari, Dr. Charles Tartt. I want you to read your creed for us, Charles.
Yeah, this is an example of a belief experiment I use in workshops sometimes in order to remind people of the beliefs that have been foisted off on us simply by being part of Western culture, whether we wanted them or not. And I'll just read a couple of paragraphs of it and understand I get people in a workshop to really decide ahead of time, I'm going to believe this all I can, and then I'm going to see what happens as my emotions react to this. And it's very educational. I call it a sadder but wiser experience, actually. And I'll just do a couple of paragraphs of it, but you, the listeners, might say, okay, I'm going to believe what he says for a minute and see what happens.
I'll tell you what I want you to do. I want the listeners to also believe what I'm going to do here for a second, and then we'll get into your creed.
All right.
It's 17 minutes. Sorry. Okay, Charles, give us the Western creed.
Okay, as I say, try believing this and see what reactions it has. You only have to believe it for a couple of minutes, then you can go back to...
All right, we are in an experiment. We are going to believe this.
This is the experiment, right?
Go through all of it.
I believe in the material universe as the only and ultimate reality, a universe controlled by fixed physical laws and blind chance. I affirm that the universe has no creator, no objective purpose, and no objective meaning or destiny. I maintain that all ideas about God or gods, enlightened beings, prophets and saviors, or other non-physical beings or forces are superstitions and delusions. Life and consciousness are totally identical to physical processes and arose from chance interactions of blind physical forces. Like the rest of my life and my consciousness have no objective purpose, meaning, or destiny. And jumping a little bit ahead, I maintain that the death of the body is the death of the mind. There is no afterlife, and all hope of such is nonsense. Now, in radio, we can never have dead air, but take 2 seconds to just notice your emotional reactions to this. And I'm purposely cutting it short, because the whole thing induces fairly powerful feelings in people, and I like to be able to work with them.
It does. I don't believe a bit of it, and have a hard time believing it, but... On the other hand...
Everything I've said here you can find repeated over and over again as supposedly scientific fact in every scientific book you're exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the picture that's being taught to us by the high prestige priests, as it were, of science about the way the universe really is.
And you wonder why there's such a runaway cocaine and drug problem in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
People are searching for some way to fill that emptiness, and they know that there's more. They know that there's more. And they're being denied any way of getting at it. And so they're taking
people
some...
People keep saying this is it.
So now what do? They look for a technological solution. Pop a pill, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Smell this. Put this in your arm.
Buy this.
Instant pudding, instant enlightenment. Instant death.
Escape.
Escape into what?
To death.
And that's the irony, because it's death that is really scaring people and making them wonder what the heck is going on here and what life is about. And to escape from thinking about it, they get there faster.
That's a powerful thing, Charles, what you just read and what you just
right.
said.
And I want people to understand that's not what I believe.
Well, we know that. No.
And it's funny, nobody drinks
hey,
my cold
believe
after
that, boy,
I
you'd be out of the
that.
Street here. You're in the wrong studio. but for that.
Yeah. But what it turns out when I do this is that people discover that while intellectually they might say, no, of course I don't believe that, emotionally they realize they believe a lot of these things because they're Westerners and it's been drummed into them over and over again.
Oh, there was some terribly ghost truths that came rollicking out of the words that you just said, and you skipped some of them.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's too powerful to do the whole thing over the air. I want to be able to work with people when I do it.
The interesting thing is,
save it for workshops.
You find yourself...
Did we write you and get a copy of it?
You have a copy in your hand.
No, I mean the audience. They may want to have a copy of that for a grounding reference.
Though. I'm planning on writing it up in either the next or the next after the next issue of The Open Mind. I'd want to put it in context.
How does someone get a copy of your newsletter?
Yeah, if people want to write me for subscription information, they can write me at the Psychology Department, University of California, Davis, California. And if you want to be efficient, the zip is 95616.
I bet they know where the university is up there.
Yeah, I think just Davis will do the
Davis
job.
Davis will just do the job. That's a good one just to ground yourself. Look at it. And then take your little experiment. I'm going to believe this for 2 minutes. Chances are you can't get through with it.
Well, if you can't get through with it, and yet that's the reality that we're all pretending that we're living in, there's a real problem. Because if we can't get through it, then we don't really feel that way, but we're acting like we do. There's a lot of pain there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emptiness, and there's a lot of need to acknowledge and explore something deeper without fear that somebody's going to think you're crazy. You're not going to be taken seriously. So by using science, which is really the language of this culture, we can... look at this in an objective kind of way, in a scientific kind of way, understand and still make that available to people on an experiential level. In fact, in a certain sense, science is meaningless unless it impacts people's lives directly in some way.
That's right.
Now, Keith's right, but we have to use real science. See,
that's right.
What we think of as science is often not science, because real science is curiosity. Real science is a way of always being open-minded and looking at things.
I like that word.
But people are human. So they often get attached to the particular things we know at the moment. And what you get instead of science is what I call the religion of scientism, where there's things that have been discovered that have to be defended against error. And scientism is what's really influenced us, the idea that we already know so much that we can dismiss all these.
Well, that becomes dogma instead of discovery.
Yeah, it becomes dogma. Real science moves you into something like parapsychology or altered states research that reminds us, hey, when you really get curious and look, the mind is open. There's all sorts of possibilities here. These other things, these physical laws, sure, they're true in certain limited ways, but they're not the whole picture.
Well, we find in the world of science, and we touch on that quite often here, and it's one of my favorite little things, that you look at all of the laws of physics that have laid down first and second law of thermodynamics, which, of course, we now know is not true. But it was if, somehow or another, they were fingered by God on stone and given to Moses and came down off Mount Sinai.
You know what Robert Oppenheimer said about science? In something called The Open Mind, incidentally, written in 1955. Yes? How about that?
How about that?
He said, there is no place for dogma in science. The scientist is free to ask any question, to doubt any assertion, to seek for any evidence, to correct any error. Where science has been used in the past to erect a new dogmatism, that dogmatism has found itself incompatible with the progress of science. And in the end, the dogma has yielded, or science and freedom have perished together.
And there are forces at work working for the perishment right now.
I'm afraid so. There are forces that would say to you, we would like you, we insist that you view reality in our way, and we do not even want you to explore certain questions. And they do that in the guise of protecting you from your own curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
As though you don't know what's good for you, as though you can't look at the information yourself and decide what it means to you. They're going to tell you. In fact, they're going to prevent you from getting that information.
However, their days are numbered.
Yes, I hope so. And I think that the public is ultimately too smart for that, because this is not something from outside of people's lives. People are having their own intuitive, psychic, you could say spiritual experiences. They know there's more going on here than meets the eye, and I like to spell that with a capital I.
Mm-hmm.
There's more going on here than meets the eye.
Right.
And you really can't fool all of the people all of the time.
You know, the art problem in the human situation was described very nicely by the poet William Wordsworth in his Intimations to Immortality. He said, "There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth, and every common sight was covered in celestial light, the glory and the freshness of a dream." He was talking about childhood. He was talking about the fact that we're born wide open. We're curious. We find the world wonderful and we look at things. But then he has to talk about what's happened to us by the time we're adults. And he says, "It is not now as it hath been of yore. Turn wheresoe'er I may, by night or day, the light which I have seen I now can see no more." We go through a terrible process that compresses us down, that closes our minds, that inhibits our very curiosity, our very zest for life. That's what we have to get away from. And, of course, that's what's exciting when we have these new discoveries in new areas of science, parapsychological stuff.